All right, it is a new year, and we usually start off the year talking about some things about personal growth, improvement, and things like that. And although I do think it's important to have a goal of personal growth, and I'm getting a ring here really bad, so personal growth, I think it's important also to think about things beyond ourselves. And in all reality, and I'm saying this the right way, I never want to be offensive, but we have developed into somewhat of a selfish society. And I think we all have seen that. And you know, we so much want, we think everything needs to be about what's for us and what develops for us. And there's nothing wrong at the first of the year with thinking about self-improvement and what we can do to better ourselves. In fact, I'm all for that. I think it's a great time to begin to analyze what we can do to improve our health. That's probably the key component we see most of the time this year is that how can I better my health? I did that a few years ago and continue to work on to make sure I'm improving my health or at least maintaining my health. And the older we get, the more important that is to do that. You know that you reach a certain place in life and when you go to CVS and the pharmacist always knows you by first name at a glance, then you know you're probably in trouble. And I've been through that. So health is always an important thing. And we jokingly say at the beginning of the year, there are so many people that go and sign up for gym memberships. We've already seen that. We've been to the gym a few times this week, New Year's Eve, and then Friday and Saturday. And we see the people coming in and signing up. And, of course, sometimes we make jest of that or joke of that. But that's a good thing. We hope they continue to stay active and to do those things there. Sometimes we improve ourselves in our job. Some of you may say, this is a year that I'm going to start my own business, my own career. I'm going to break away from where I'm working and try to do something else. Some folks decide that they're going to go back to school and increase themselves with their education. There's so many things that are important to do, and we're not against those things. But so many times we have developed an idea that everything should be about us. In fact, during the holidays, we've seen this a lot because Christmas, unfortunately, has turned somewhat materialistic in a sense where it's got to be, this is a time to get what you want. I even saw a television commercial where somebody actually screams out, today you get what you want. And everybody applauds and stuff because it's all about me. And although we enjoy exchanging gifts and getting gifts and giving gifts, it's a nice thing, but we've turned into that. So I decided that for the first 3 weeks of this year, I got two series I'm going to do in a row. This one is going to be called Selfless Improvement. And we're going to talk about, you know, looking outside of ourselves. And then in about 3 or 4 weeks, we're going to start another series just mainly for the church called The Blueprints of a Healthy Church. And we're going to talk about strengthening our church in so many facets. And then ending with a nice get-together for a meeting to talk about our budget, to talk about where we're going from there for the year, our programs, and our direction. But I wanted to start off with this subject here. I think it's important that we try to think of ourselves more about not so much how can I improve myself, but how can I improve the world around me. There are a lot of needs out there, and as the topic is called today, the big question, I'm going to ask you a challenging question that I think will help you begin your thinking about how can I change the world around me? How can I better someone else? How can I get from worrying so much about me that I actually leverage myself for the betterment of the society I live in, the friends I have, the family I have, the community of church I have, whatever it is. How can I go through this year now and make it my New Year's resolution to improve the world around me? There's many stories in the Bible, and after all these years, I've probably either taught, read, or somehow did something with what every story in the Bible. And of course, a lot of folks that know me know my favorite Old Testament book is the book of Nehemiah. And in a few minutes, I'm going to read the entire first chapter, make some comments about it as we go through there. What I like about the book of Nehemiah, for me, it is a practical book. In fact, in the book of Nehemiah, there are no miracles ever mentioned. In the book of Nehemiah, there is no deep spiritual truths. In the book of Nehemiah is a book about simply this, is a person having a burden to do something and taking the hard work to do it. And as we begin this year, I kind of like that idea. So many times we talk about the first of the year, that I want God to bless my year. I want God to do something for me. I want to see miracles happen. Sometimes what we need to say is that simply this, is God, I love a good miracle, I love a great blessing, but I want this year to be about me being willing to do what I need to do to better the community and the surrounding society I am. It will take hard work. It will take sacrifice. It will take blood, sweat, and tears to accomplish a goal. And that's what the book of Nehemiah is about. In fact, the book of Nehemiah deals with the whole idea of the Jewish people coming back to their home territory and reuniting to begin their society again, where Ezra is a book about the spiritual ramifications of that, where Nehemiah is all about the practical and the secular part of that. But it has some spiritual truths we're going to see in a few minutes here. So as I want to set this up, and as I normally do, I want to give you, especially if you're not really, you know, knowledgeable of the Bible, you haven't been a student of it, or maybe the Old Testament is not where you have gone, I always try to give some background and history about what took place as we set up the story we're going to talk about. About 605 B.C., but let me go a little further back. God made a covenant with the nation of Israel back through Abraham. And God made a covenant through Moses. And God had made these covenants. And one part of the covenant was that if you are faithful to me, I will be faithful to you, and you will enjoy the fruits of your land. But if you're unfaithful to me, I will disperse you to around the world. If you think about the history of Israel, we know there are a number of times where they were not living in Judah, they were not living in Israel, they were cast around the world. In fact, you know the story about Moses when the children of Israel were taken into bondage in Egypt. It was Moses that came and led them back to the promised land that was committed to them, but they had to recommit. So all through the history of Israel, there's always been this time that they were gone through where someone would come in, conquer them, disperse them around the world because they were concerned, because there was a knowledgeable thing that Jewish people are the people of God, that when they're in one place, they become a powerful entity. And so throughout history, the Jewish people have always been back to their land and then dispersed again, back to their land and then dispersed again. In fact, when we get to the time of Jesus, we know that they're back in their land, but they're under the rule of the Roman government. But about 70 AD, they are now once again dispersed around the world out of fear that they were going to become too strong. And it wasn't until 1948 that they were given their land back to them once again. So it's been an ongoing thing. So in the Old Testament, about 605 BC, one of these situations happened. The Jewish people were enjoying their place in their land, and the Babylonians became the strong empire. Throughout history, there were strong empires. There was the Babylonian Empire, the Egyptian Empire, the Persian Empire, the Roman Empire. It goes on from there. At this time, 605 BC, is the Babylonians were in power, and the leader at that time decided that they needed to separate the Jewish people from their land. And so they went and dispersed all the people from their land to different places so that they would not be able to unify and create a power against the powers to be. About 70 years later, after 605 BC, we find that the Persian Empire had captured the Babylonian Empire. And Cyrus the Great, who was the leader of the world at that time, because the Persians now became the power bosses of the world, had this idea that he wasn't threatened by the Jewish people. And so he decided that what he was going to do is give an edict or a ruling or a letter saying that he is going to encourage the Jewish people to leave where they are unless they want to stay and go back to their land to reignite the economy, to reignite whatever they want to do and bring them back. And so that's exactly what had happened. Well, during that time, we had Zerubbabel, who was the one who came back and began to rebuild the temple. Ezra came back to begin to reinstate the sacrificial system. But when they went back to her for about 70 years, they were doing all this. The only thing that wasn't completed was the walls around Jerusalem, which was very sacred to them because they were commanded when they built those years and years before. It was part of their destiny, part of their heritage. Now, we find that Nehemiah was one of those. We don't know that he actually had ever been to Jerusalem, by the way, or to Judea. There's nothing that says he was. But there came a time when all this is taking place. The Jewish people are being sent back to their land. They're under the Persian leadership. And Nehemiah pops up on the scene, and he actually was a person who did not go back to Judea, to Israel. He had a cushy job. He was the king's cupbearer, which means he actually was a right-hand person to the king, King Artaxerxes of Persia. And so he had no incentive to want to go back to Jerusalem Because he had it made. I mean, he was living in the palace in Susa. He was having three meals a day. He knew where all things that he needed were coming from. He didn't have to worry about safety or security or anything. He had a cushy job in the capital of the world working for the top guy. And so he had even no reason to even be burdened about what's going back in Jerusalem. Even though he is a Jewish person, even though he could have gone back, and even though he probably had relatives that had gone back there and had been part of it, I imagine he was excited that he got word that they're all going back. And I'm sure he got excited when he hears that Zerubbabel was going to rebuild the temple. That must have been something that he really enjoyed hearing about. I imagine he loved it when he heard that Ezra was going to reinstate the sacrificial system because that was important to the Jewish people. But he wasn't going back because he had a great, cushy job. And then what happens, some folks are traveling back and forth because during this time there was freedom to travel because once again the Jewish people now were free to come and go. And he has some friends, brethren, whether they were real brothers or sisters or whether they were his comrades or people that he knew, he begins to inquire not only about the temple and about the sacrifice, he wanted to know about the walls. He wanted to know, was there now, after 70 years of Israel and Jewish people being back there, was there enthusiasm? Was there dancing in the streets? Was there self-esteem? Was it going good? And he got word that he didn't expect to hear. And that's where we pick up the story in the book of Nehemiah. Chapter 1 of the book of Nehemiah, we're going to read the entire chapter. I may stop a couple of times to make some comments. And then I want to ask you the challenging question. I want to ask you, see, there's a reason why Nehemiah did what he did. And it all comes down to a question that as we begin this year, if we're going to make a difference in the world around us, if we're going to selfless improve and make the world around us a better place, it's a question that we need to start with, because everything starts with this question. Every motivation comes from this question, and anything that's ever been done for good in this world comes from this question I'm going to give to you in a few minutes here. But let's begin reading. It says in verse number 1, the words of Nehemiah, the son of Hakaliah, in the month of Kivlez, in the 12th year, while I was in the citadel of Susa. He was in the capital region. He was living with the king. Hananah, one of my brothers, came from Judah with other men, and I questioned him about the Jewish remnant that had survived the exiles and are also about Jerusalem. Because I questioned him about, so how's things going there? Those that were exiled, they went back. How's it going? What's Jerusalem up to? Is it going good? They said to me, those who survived the exile are back in the province and are in great trouble and disgrace. The wall of Jerusalem is broken down and its gates have been burned with fire. When I heard these things, I sat down and wept. For some days I mourned and fasted and prayed before the God of heaven. Then I said, Lord, the God of heaven, the great and awesome God who keeps his covenant of love of those who love him and keeps his commandments, let your ear be attentive and your eyes be open to hear the prayers of your servant in prayer, praying before you day and night for your servants, the people of Israel. I confess the sins of the Israelites, including myself and my father's family, we have committed against you. He realized that. We have acted very wickedly towards you. We have not obeyed your commands, decrees, and laws you gave to your servant Moses. Remember the instructions you gave to your servant Moses, saying, if you are unfaithful, I will scatter you among the nations. But if you return to me and obey my commands, then even if your exiled people are in the farthest horizons, I will gather them there and bring them to the place I have chosen as a dwelling for my name. He's simply saying, if you're unfaithful, you're going to be scattered around. But if you're faithful, I'm going to bring you back to the city of my name, the city of David, God's city. I'm going to bring you back to that. He says in verse 10, they are your servants and your people, whom you have redeemed with your great strength and your mighty hand. Lord, your ear be attentive to the prayer of this servant and to the prayer of your servants to delight in revering your name. Give your servant success today by granting him favor in the presence of this man. I was the king, cupbearer of the king. So let me kind of go over that there. He gets this word about what's taking place. He hears that the walls are torn down, the gates have been destroyed, the self-esteem, the disgrace for his people. And he begins to sit down and pray and talk to God. He understood, by the way, the law of God, because he acknowledges here. He says, God, I know you said to Moses that if we're unfaithful, you will scatter us. And if we are faithful, you will bring us back. And apparently you have been bringing us back, but it seems like there's some disgrace that is still there. He confesses the sins of the Israelites, his family, and everybody else. He has the right mindset for what he's up against there. But he also realizes, and we're not going to read it, but in chapter 2 and 3, he begins to have a conversation with King Artaxerxes about going to do the work to repair the walls. And to make a long story short, so you know the story if you're new to all this, he actually gets permission in chapter 2 from King Artaxerxes to go and be the key person, although he has never done carpentry in his entire life. He was a cupbearer. He had never done blueprinting in his life. He never built a thing in his life. He asked the king if he could be released for a while to go to Jerusalem and head up the project to rebuild the walls. King Artaxerxes gives him permission to do that. Of course, Nehemiah, who is probably pretty smart, he figures, well, since I got a yes for him to go, I might as well hit him up for paying for it. So he turns to King Artaxerxes and says, listen, while I go, will you give me letters that as I go to those that are the foresters and those that have the lumber, that you will supply all the material needed to build the wall? And King Artaxerxes gave him all that. So what happened is the Persian Empire actually funded the rebuilding of the Jewish wall around Jerusalem. So he goes there. He had some enemies. There were those there trying to stop the work. He motivated the people. And if you know the story, as you get to chapter 6 or so, you know that it says there that even before the time he had planned to finish, he got the work done. The walls were completed. So to make a long story short, before I get into the big question, he basically talked to the king of Persia about being released to go build the walls around Jerusalem, and he got permission to do it, and he got the funding to do it, and he went and did it. This is a great success story. But here's the thing. He didn't do it for himself. He didn't do it for glory. He didn't do it because it benefited his pockets. He didn't do it for self-improvement. He did it because he heard the news that there was a need somewhere, a disgrace somewhere, and something needed to be done. And he went and did it. And he led it. He was threatened with his life to be murdered by the enemies that were trying to stop him, that were intimidated. He was created rumors about him, lies about him from the enemies trying to stop him, to discourage the people. At one point, he finally said, here's what we're going to do. We're going to have a trowel in one hand to lay whatever mud there is on the walls, and we're going to have a sword in the other hand so we keep working while we're protecting ourselves. When someone tried to discourage him and says, stop building the walls, we want to talk to you, he says, listen, I can't come down from what I'm doing because I'm doing too great a work. He focused on what needed to be done, but it did not benefit him at all. His New Year's resolution, when he heard about the walls in Jerusalem, word about, I'm in good shape, I have a luxury job, I have everything I need, I can go to the, you know, I'm here in Susa, I'm at the Citadel, we got a nice gym, I'm going to go work out, I'm going to do all these things. I have it made. But he chose to do something outside himself. He chose to do something for somebody else. Because he asked the big question. And this is a question that as we begin this year, if you want to make a difference in the world around us, if you really want to be selfless improvement and impact the people around you and do something outside of you, here's the question you have to ask yourself. The question is, what breaks your heart? Interesting here in verse 4, it said this when he heard the news. And when I heard these things, I sat down and wept. And for some days I mourned and fasted and prayed before God of heaven. His heart got broken for what he heard was going on. And his heart got so broken that he wept and he prayed. And in chapter 2, when he goes before the king on his daily routine as he must do, he probably had the red eyes, the sore bloodshot eyes. His demeanor was blue and down and depressed. He was asked by the king, why are you so down? And the king says, why are you down and why are you sad in the presence of me? Which, by the way, he could have got the death penalty for not being composed when he went before the king. And he says to the king in chapter 2, why should I not be depressed, discouraged? Why should not my heart be broken? My home territory, which you've allowed people to go back to. You allowed them to go back to. The walls are torn down. The gates have been burned with fire. It's a disgrace. So why should I not have a broken heart over that? And the king said to him, he says, what do you want to do? He says, I want to go back and solve the problem. And if you give me permission, I'll do that. And the king gave him permission, gave him the timber, gave the materials, gave him the safety to go and do the job. And he went back there in shorter time than he anticipated. Him and the people that were dedicated around him rebuilt the walls of Jerusalem. But it all started when he got a broken heart about something he heard. When it comes to the 2020, there are a lot of needs out there. There are kids that need mentoring in schools. There are families that are struggling to make ends meet. There are teenagers that are contemplating from time to time suicide. And we've dealt with some of the counseling here and some of that. There are those that are dealing with substance abuse, whether they be young or old. There are those out there having a time trying to heat their homes. There are so many things outside of us. And to me, the New Year's resolution that we should have as Christian people should not just be, which is okay to say, I want to get healthy. Good to do. I want to read some new books. I want to improve myself in some way. Good to do. But don't make that the captivating part of who you are. You ought to be, and I ought to be saying, what resolution can I make to change the world around me? And to know what to do, it's been this week looking around in all the areas of your life, and the one that begins to break your heart is probably the one you ought to begin to strategize and leverage and work towards making better. See, as a church collectively, we get involved in programs and we do things for community for fun. We do help in the soup kitchen. Some of you did last week. Thank you so much. We do help with the food banks. We do help with those things there. We gave out 130 Christmas trees. That's a collective thing. And sometimes that's a strategy for being able to let folks know we're here in the community. But sometimes, even though those are good things to do, they become fluff. Because we're expected to do those things as a church collectively. In fact, we get letters all the time and phone calls all the time and say, hey, can your church help out with this? We got invited recently to maybe help with a splash pad in East Windsor. Because we're part of our community. And all those things are nice and good. And collectively, we will choose what we get involved in. And then in the global scene, we will get involved with global missions. As we've already been, we have missionaries over in Europe, we have some in Mexico, and hopefully soon we'll have some in Asia, the whole region, Japan, all through the Asian territory. But I'm not talking about collectively as a church. I'm not talking about what we're going to do together. And sometimes we do so that people will know that we care about our community. I'm talking about individually what breaks your heart. And when you can determine that, when you can finally be vulnerable to accept the fact that this really breaks my heart. And you may say, well, I sure hope somebody does something about it. I'm not qualified to do anything about it. Sometimes we do the blame game. Nothing's ever been resolved by blaming. I want to remind you of something. Nehemiah went and rebuilt the walls of Jerusalem, but Nehemiah never had any training in building, carpentry, blueprints, architecture, anything. He was the least qualified to do it. What made him qualified and made him successful, because when you heard the news about his people and about the disgrace and depression and discouragement, instead of sitting back in his luxury job, he said, this breaks my heart. And when he got the opportunity, he chose to respond. Something about the last verse in that passage we read too, and this is interesting to me. I never really thought about this before. Chapter 1 is all about he prayed, his heart is broken, but the last verse in that says, "And I am the cupbearer for the king." And I thought to myself, what in the world does that have to do with anything? Is that braggadocious? I'm the cupbearer of the king? And after I thought about this and thought about it for this week, I come to a different conclusion I've had before, and I've taught on Nehemiah a lot. I think when he says, "I am the cupbearer of the king," he probably thought to himself, I have an avenue that nobody else has to solve the problem. I'm going to talk to the king tomorrow. It may be scary, it may be frightening, but I'm going to leverage my position to get something done. When you look at the New Testament, we know that Jesus has a lot of principles, and Jesus taught a lot of basic principles. On so many things, wonderful teaching. But three things that I kind of wrote in a generic way out of the teaching of Jesus that were his three basic principles was this: devotion to God is measured by our devotion to others. People have inherent value, not just ascribed value, which means they have a God-given value, not just because we say they do. In fact, our founders of our nation put into the Declaration of Independence that these truths are self-evident, that all people are created equal and that are endowed. Actually, the first words they put in there, Thomas Jefferson, was, "It is sacred." These things are sacred, not self-evident. Ben Franklin changed the name. He thought it sounded too religious. That all men are created equal and endowed with power and freedom from their creator. And thirdly, what Jesus taught, hearts should be broken by the human needs that are out there. I think as we start the new year, and I got two more weeks to talk to you about a couple other facets of this whole thing of selfless improvement and what the scripture teach about us really emptying ourselves and thinking of others first. I want you to think about this week. Go forth with your own New Year's resolution, self-improvement. You know, do the things you need to do. But let's break away from the American cultural society temptation to be able to say that I think, you know, it's all about me. Let's break that mold and say 2020 will be me individually. Put your name there. When God breaks my heart about some issue or need out there, I won't say, "I hope somebody does something." I will ask God, "God, allow me to be the vessel that solves the problem, helps the need, lifts that person, loves that person, loves that community. Let me be your Nehemiah." And that's where it starts with that question. What breaks your heart? Let me give you the walk away. If you're new to this, walk away is simply the final thing I want to say to be able to give you something to think about as we leave today. If you want to become a better person, do something that makes the world a better place. When we focus more about others than we do ourselves, the world will become a better place. When we give of ourselves, the world will become a better place. When we want the others to excel and succeed more than us, the world will be a better place. What breaks your heart? Would you bow your heads for just a moment? We're going to talk this week and the next 2 weeks about this idea of selfless improvement, simply to get our minds focused on making a difference. And really, maybe it's just me, sometimes it is me, where I think about even Christmas, we got very materialistic and so many things, everybody has to have this, that, or whatever, and I think it's all fun and everything else, but I think we become very materialistic in the society. We become very selfish in society. And I really want us to start this year as a church family, not only collectively as a church family. That's why we want to increase our offerings and grow, because we want to be able to do more things. Because if we see something that breaks our church's heart, we need to be able to respond and do something about it. And we need the resources to do that. But I ask you, as you begin this really first full week of 2020, how can you change the world around you. And I think it all starts with you asking the question, what is on your heart? What burden is there? What injustice have you seen that you'd hope that somebody would solve the problem, but maybe it's because God put it on your heart, you're the one supposed to be solving the problem. What arena in life can you get into to help be a part of solutions? What area of ministry could you be involved in church to advance and help the cause? Today we deal with young people, deal with all kinds of stresses beyond what we ever thought they would. When I was a teenager, we didn't deal with half of what they deal with. And we need teamwork to be able to minister to our young people. What breaks your heart? Father, we're thankful. We just ask, Lord, that you use this first lesson out of three to get us tuned in with you, so that we begin this year not saying about this should be about the year about me. May we say this is a year about making the world around me a better place and serving others and lifting others up and encouraging others. 2020 is about making the world a better place, and I start with the neighborhood right around me. We ask in Christ's name, amen.